Today for our Friday Forum webinar, we welcome UVA alumnus Steve Riamacchi. Steve, who graduated from the college in 94, is an assistant vice president at GEICO, the second largest auto insurance company in the U.S., where he heads pricing research using actuarial, modeling, and other techniques to understand GEICO's business results. Joining GEICO in 1994 as an actuarial associate, Steve's career has included pricing, reserving, and product management roles. He is a fellow of the Casualty Actuarial Society. Steve graduated from the College of Arts and Sciences with a Bachelor of Arts degrees in both mathematics and economics, and lives in Vienna, Virginia with his wife, Kate, who is a Curry School alumna from the class of 2003, and their four young children. Please join me in welcoming Steve Riamacchi with Use Your Business Skills to Succeed in Data Analytics.
Thank you, Liz. It's an exciting time for me. I love this time of year because spring is coming and we're also in the middle of March Madness, which I love to watch. So I'm excited for the game that we had yesterday and the results that UVA had, and I want to say wahoo-wah, go Wahoos in the tournament. Thank you for having me today. It's exciting to talk to you and talk to some fellow UVA alums, and I'm excited to kind of share some of the thoughts that I have around data analytics and some of the things that have made people successful in this field from my perspective and my experience at GEICO. So today I'm going to just go through a quick background of how I got involved in actuarial work and the insurance industry, talk a little bit about what I think makes the auto insurance industry so exciting to work in and kind of how data analytics plays into that. And then we'll transition into some of the tips or some of the skills that I've seen help some of our data analysts here at GEICO be the most successful that they can be. And then finally, we'll talk through different ways that we've applied data analytics in GEICO and some of the different opportunities that we have to apply those skills to help our business grow. So before we get too far, I just wanted to do a quick survey of the attendees to see how many people actually know what an actuary is. Okay, we've got a few people who know what actuarial work is, a few people who don't, and that's fine, that's fair. I actually, given my my background, knew what an actuary was from quite an early stage. I actually grew up in West Hartford, Connecticut, just outside of Hartford, which happens to be the insurance capital of the United States, and because of that was very familiar with insurance. Both of my parents worked for insurance companies up there, and actually in our math classes in high school, I remember being recruited for our actuarial work at the time. It was being touted as the number one job to work in, and so that kind of piqued my interest, but I wasn't committed to it when I went to college. And so when I actually had an uncle who lives down in Williamsburg, Virginia, and he really was trying to recruit me to go to William & Mary, but when I came down to visit Charlottesville at the same time, I just fell in love with the grounds and UVA and the opportunities that it provided, so I ended up going to UVA instead of William & Mary and graduated in 1994 with both a math and economics degree. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something involving analytics and using my math background. And so because I had that prior experience with insurance and actuarial profession from an early stage, I applied for different positions as an actuarial analyst and was fortunate enough to get an opportunity here at GEICO. We're located up here in the D.C. area, which was perfect for me because I had many friends from UVA who were moving back up to the area to work after graduation. And so I spent several years working as an actuarial analyst doing both pricing and reserving work, and learning the mechanics of the calculations, how to evaluate risk, and what we do as actuaries is we're really trained to evaluate risk and then figure out how to use that evaluation to set the prices appropriately for our insurance, as well as understand what risks are happening and how risks are changing going forward into the future. So I worked as both a pricing analyst as well as a reserving analyst, working on both how do we set the prices for insurance, and then on the reserving side, how do we evaluate what the actual costs are that GEICO is incurring based on the claims and accidents that have been occurring. I was pursuing my casualty actuarial designation and achieved my fellowship, that, as Liz mentioned, back in 2002. And really since then, I've been moving through different management level positions and kind of not as involved in the day-to-day work on analytics, but more involved on the receiving side of the analyst's information. And so I kind of have a good perspective on how the work that data analysts do gets translated into management's perspective of how to use that information. So that's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit later in the presentation today. So now I'm an assistant vice president here at GEICO, and I'm in charge of our research area on the pricing side. So we do a lot of modeling and data analytics to try to improve our product and evaluate the risk better over time. I've worked on numerous different analytical projects throughout the years. I've listed just a couple here. California is a very complicated state to work in from an insurance standpoint, and I've worked on a number of class plan and pricing proposals that required us to look at kind of a multivariate view of a lot of the insurance statistics that we're evaluating. And so I got a lot of experience there. And then I've been working on modeling of basically a complete underwriting and pricing structure, so really evaluating how can we improve our product, as well as then once we make decisions, how that affects customers' reaction and what their likelihood is to stay with GEICO, as well as potentially leave GEICO. So I've got a fairly good background in terms of how to apply analytics within the actuarial field in insurance, and that's what I'm going to base a lot of my comments on today. But some of the things that, you know, I don't think anyone, even if you grow up in Hartford, you dream of working for an insurance company, but some of the things that have made it very appealing to me since I've been in the insurance industry are these things. The auto insurance industry is extremely competitive. It's a competitive market. There's a lot of advertising that goes on, and the insurance industry, or the auto insurance industry itself, is not growing that fast. So really, we're in a takeaway business where we're competing with our other companies to try and gain market share and insure as many customers as we can. And we really believe that GEICO offers the best product to do that. But insurance is a unique product in that really you don't know what the costs of the product are going to be before you set the prices for it. And that's the real challenge within insurance, is trying to predict what's going to happen in the future. We are pricing today for accidents that are going to happen in the future, and we need to make sure that the prices that we're charging will be adequate to cover those costs. And to do that, we rely on a lot of data. It's a really highly data-driven industry, and that's appealing to someone with a math, economics, or any sort of analytic background. And we'll go through some examples of different types of associates we have here at GEICO. It is a highly regulated industry. There's state-by-state regulation, and in order to account for that, you know, we have to make variances in our products state by state, and we have to make sure that any analysis that we do will be understood by the regulators, and we can clearly explain that. And that really gets at some of the skills that I want to talk about a little bit later in the discussion. And the other thing is, it's a really dynamic and evolving industry. There's a lot of changes going on within vehicle manufacturers and safety features that as well as some of the things that are going on with ride sharing and how that impacts the insurance industry is kind of a dynamic and evolving thing, and part of what our job is here is to try and figure out how to account for that and deal with that as we go forward. So I just had a quick poll again. What market rank do you think GEICO currently holds in the auto insurance industry? If you could respond with the A, B, C, D, or E, we get a sense for. Okay, we've actually got a pretty good, not quite an even distribution, but quite a few people selecting either third, second, or first. And this is a graph that kind of shows the market share over time since 1991 within the auto insurance industry. And GEICO is this blue line here compared to some of our top competitors. And just recently, GEICO passed Allstate to become the second largest auto insurance company in the industry. And we continue to grow forward. And you can see that we've had fairly significant growth in the market over the last 20 years or so. And we really have our sights set on this top line of State Farm and trying to figure out how we can continue to stay competitive and profitable to grow our market. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the factors that we look at and what kind of makes this challenging. So many of you may not be familiar with the auto insurance product itself or the industry, but basically I categorize the factors that we analyze to evaluate risk into four different categories. There's the driver aspect of it. So which drivers are you insuring? What's their age, their gender, their marital status? What's the driving history of some of those people? Have they had regular accidents? Are they habitual speeders? Are there other violations or infractions that they've incurred that might be predictive of whether they're going to continue to do that in the future? And how many years have they been licensed? So the more experience you have as a driver, generally the better your driving performance is, which means fewer accidents, which means lower risk for us at GEICO. Then you have the vehicle itself. So we insure different vehicles. I picked this picture because I thought it was a cool picture, but if I was picking a picture that represents where I am in my life right now, it probably would be a minivan. So, but the type of vehicle that you're insuring, how you use the vehicle, the mileage that you're putting on that vehicle is important. And then how much it's going to cost to either replace that vehicle in case of a total accident or repair that vehicle is important. And finally, the safety features that are coming on to the vehicles now are really going to change what a lot of people think the results are of the vehicles and how that affects auto insurance. And we're looking at that on a regular basis. But even right here with what I talked about with the type of vehicle and the driver, you can see that there's probably a correlation between the type of vehicle that we're insuring and the driver itself. And that adds some complexity to the analysis that we do. Then I have a category of the household. So not just the individual drivers, but what's the total makeup of the household? So how many drivers are there on the policy? How many vehicles are on the policy? What type of vehicles are they? What are the age of the youngest driver? How many youthful operators are there on the policy? What's the insurance history? Has the policy been regularly insured over time, or has it not been regularly insured? And finally, you've got the environment. You know, where you are driving is very important. If you're driving in a very congested urban area versus a rural area, that has a big impact on the likelihood of an accident, as well as what the cost of the accident is going to be. So the litigiousness, whether there's going to be an attorney involvement, gas prices is a really important aspect, and we've seen lots of changes in gas prices recently that have really had an impact on how much people are driving and what their exposure or their risk is. And unemployment as well is another indicator of how much people are going to drive. As unemployment changes, if unemployment is dropping, more people may be commuting to work, may be driving, that sort of thing. So one of the things you can see is there are a lot of factors that go into determining what the risk is. And so it's a challenge. And the costs are not known in advance. So what we try to do is we try to evaluate whether the list of characteristics that I had on the prior slides is a full list, or are there other factors that are going into it? Are they changing? How do they interact with each other? What's it going to look like in the future? And all of these are the challenges that we have in my area now to try to figure out what's the best way to analyze that and develop a product that's going to be the most adaptable to changes as well as keep up with the improvements that are going on in the industry. The other thing is there is a changing regulatory environment, so that tends to make it more challenging to know that something we've been doing in the past may be changing in the future, and we have to figure out how to adapt to that. So how many people right now are in data analyst roles? I'm kind of curious to see what the makeup is of the audience here. Okay, it actually looks like it's a pretty even mix of people who are in data analytic roles right now and those who are not. So that's interesting, but I wanted to just talk about the meat of the presentation, which is what are some of the skills that I've witnessed that I think are really important to making a good data analyst, and you could extend these to other roles as well. Let me just take a quick aside here. One of the things that I was always very proud of at UVA is not just that they had, good football, good basketball programs, but it was the breadth of the athletic programs that we had at UVA. UVA is regularly recognized for the broad athletic program and the success that many different teams have had within their respective sports. And so you've got men's and women's, you've got basketball, football, tennis, soccer, lacrosse, lots of different things. And I think it's that broad experience that makes the UVA athletic program successful. Well, I can actually attribute that also to data analysts. Obviously we're looking for people that have good analytical skills and people who can handle the number crunching and the data and the analytics part of it, but that's not really enough to make you successful as a data analyst. There are lots of other skills that you can hone through other experiences, through other classes, through other job performance that really will make you that much more successful as a data analyst. Business decision making is really critical. You can have the best analytical skills of anyone in the company, but if you can't make a decision from those analytics, then that's really not as useful as someone who can look at the data, look at the results of the model, and actually make a decision from that and make a recommendation for how it's going to improve your product. Presentation skills and communication are critical to this role, and I can't stress that enough, and we'll go through some more slides on this in a little bit, but the most successful data analysts are the people who can get non-technical, non-analytical people to understand what they're doing and to make sense of what they're doing. So we'll talk about that in a few slides, but I would actually say that may be one of the most, if not the most important additional skill in addition to your analytics that will make you successful. Data visualization, how can you evaluate lots of data and present it in such a way that people will understand and that you can understand what's really going on behind the data? That's an important part of it. And then management and leadership. In GEICO, and I think in a lot of companies, we really see data analysts as providing the value in the decision-making and in the leadership going forward. And we want lots of our management and leadership associates to be familiar with the analytic skills and be able to understand that. And as a data analyst, if you can start developing those skills, that's going to prepare you for future success. And it's really going to open a lot of doors for you in the future. All right, so let's talk about some of these skills a little bit more. I mentioned earlier, communication skills are one of the most important skills that you need to have as a data analyst. Lots of times as data analysts, you are working on pretty complex issues. You're dealing with lots of data and you're making lots of assumptions. And it's important that you are able to condense those complex issues down into understandable messages for your audience. This is one of the skills that I think Warren Buffett really has, and he has an unbelievable way of taking financial information and financial theories and boiling it down into very easy to understand, manageable concepts. He often relates these concepts to things that people are familiar with, makes analogies to how it may relate to, you know, what you deal with on a day-to-day basis. And if you can really figure out how to relate these complex issues into understandable concepts for people, that's important. You have to understand where your audience is and what their level of understanding is of the analytics, and tailor your communication to that level. I've had lots of experiences where we've had data analysts come into meetings to present a proposal to senior management and start talking about the statistics and the p-values and you know, least squares and all this sort of stuff in regression. And what ends up happening is you lose your audience and they start getting lost in the technical words that you're saying and lose the message of what the result or what the proposal is. So you really have to understand where your audience is and tailor your presentation to that audience. We have regular internal meetings here between our data analysts, and in those discussions, absolutely be as technical as you can be. In fact, that's the point of those meetings, is to be technical so that your peers and your audience can evaluate that and provide feedback on that. But then when you take those same concepts to higher levels of management, people that are not in your area of expertise or people who are making business decisions from that, make sure that you tailor it. This is the number one, I think, failure of data analysts in our area, is people who don't know how to tailor their presentation to the audience that they are speaking to. But the other point is, communication is a two-way street. And a lot of times in these discussions, you'll be presenting a topic and your audience will ask questions or challenge you in ways that maybe you hadn't thought about. And it's typical for our data analysts to really fall back on, well, this is what the model says and this is how you should interpret it. But it's really important that you listen to the questions and you really try to interpret what the meaning is. Many times we've had data analysts that are in meetings with management, and management is not just focused on this one topic. They're trying to figure out how this topic fits in with the broader picture of the operations at the company. And so they may ask a question that's not been contemplated in your model, and you need to understand why they're asking that question. What's the real motivation behind the question? What are they really trying to get at if they don't ask it in a way that you really can interpret very well? But then process that and figure out, okay, how do I take that feedback and either answer it a different way for my analysis or go back and try to improve my analysis to address those questions? Or sometimes you say that you know, that's not in scope for the project, but that you'll take that back and look at it as a follow-up. So communication, in my estimation, is the biggest skill that has communication problems are the biggest problems that people have had that have held them back from being successful. And conversely, you know, people who are able to communicate well have been extremely successful within our organization and have really advanced from the data analytic role to more of a management level perspective. The other tendency that we have as data analysts is that we think that the model provides the answer and that whatever the model says is what we should do. And now that I am on a kind of the management side and kind of viewing it from a little bit of a different perspective, we need our data analysts to recognize that models do provide valuable information, but they don't always tell you what the answer is. The biggest concern or the biggest issue that tends to come up is that every model is built on assumptions. So there are assumptions underlying every analysis that you do. And you really have to understand how strong those assumptions are and what are the weaknesses of the model, what are the things that it doesn't address that may be considerations that the business decision makers need to contemplate. One of the things that I loved back in my math degree and why I was so involved in math was I liked that there was always a right answer. And you know, a lot of our people with math backgrounds love that aspect of it. And you can learn how to build the model so that it gives you an answer, but you have to recognize that that is not the only answer. It's one piece of information that you can use to make a decision. And the best analysts are the people who can recognize that. Another thing that I've experienced is that sometimes you have data analysts who are extremely intelligent, extremely bright, and make building models, and they believe that the model is the only piece of information that should be used. But what you see, what I've seen in actual practice is that everyone comes in with their own preconceived ideas of what the result of your model should be. And you have to be aware of those, and you have to acknowledge those, and you have to respect those. A lot of that comes from historical data, historical experience that our management has, and it's valuable information, and it's information that should be considered. And I like to equate this to the challenge in baseball between the old school scouts who really value going out to the field and watching a player and you know, seeing how fast they throw and seeing what their body language is and how they act on the field versus the sabermetricians who really dig into the data and the analytics and come up with new ways to evaluate the performance of players. And both are valuable, and both are important to consider when you're making a decision. And so it's important to understand if you have some old baseball scouts in your organization that are coming in with their experience and their way of doing things, that you recognize that, respect that, and be prepared to kind of talk about how your analytic project or your result of your project fits in or doesn't fit in. And if it doesn't fit in with their preconceived ideas, you have to be prepared to explain that. So let me move on to the next one. Adaptability. This is important. Again, a lot of these tendencies come with math and analysts is that, you know, when you build something, you think it's the right way to do it, it's the only way to do it, but you really have to be willing to adjust based on the feedback that you get from others. You really have to look for new sources. If there's some information that you're missing, the best data analysts will go out and try and find that. And if it's in-house, that's great. You can try and mine that and figure out how to use that in your analysis. But if it's not, you may have to go outside somewhere and look for more data to answer questions that other people have. And you need to have models or you need to have analytics that are able to adjust as the environment changes. This could be the external environment, like what's going on for us in auto insurance, what's going on in the industry as a whole, what's going on in the regulatory environment. but it also may be where you are as a company and what your priorities are for the company at the time. And sometimes those shift, and you have to understand where the company is in terms of the overall results, in terms of the overall priorities, and how maybe this time for your proposal is not the right time, but maybe another time would be, or why it might fit in and really address the current priorities of the organization. So the understanding to, you know, be able to say, this is my analysis and this is why it's important now, and if things change, here's how it would affect that, is a really valuable skill to have. And again, this goes back to the tendency that we have as data analysts is to think that the model is perfect, but you really have to evaluate, are the assumptions that you've made realistic? In what context are they going to be applied? So what is, you know, which users are going to be using this model? Do they understand what's happening? Is the environment changing? And the best way to address that is through validation. And that's a pretty standard practice within analysts to validate. But it's really important in our job to validate our results with actual experience that we've had in the past. So if we can apply our model to a specific time period that we knew we had certain issues or certain problems in our results, how would this model have addressed that or fixed it? And if you can show that, that gets a lot of buy-in from the organization. And then conversely, once you've implemented your analysis, once you've implemented your proposal, making sure that you take the time to validate the results afterwards so that it's not just the theoretical benefit that you were going to get, but you can actually go back and show to the organization, we thought we were going to get X, Y, and Z, and when we looked at the results afterwards, we got X, Y, and maybe we didn't get Z, but here's Y, and here's what we're going to do about it to address that later on. The last thing I would say is curiosity, curiosity, curiosity. We are looking for here at GEICO, and I think a lot of people who are not willing to just do what they're asked, but are willing to push the boundaries, willing to look for new things to evaluate. If you do an analysis and you get unexpected results, it's not enough to just say that the result was unexpected. You have to be able to explain why or research that further to provide better information. Ask why things happen the way they do and really challenge the way things are performed today. Again, keeping in mind, if you come up with a new way to do it, you have to prove that that's going to be a better way than the current process. And identify new processes or problems to investigate. We're looking for people who are going to be seeking out opportunities for them to make their mark, for them to apply the analytics in a way that's going to improve our company results and make us more successful and continue us on that path of growth to achieve the number one market share in the industry. So those are kind of the key successful skills that I've seen in my experience that have made some of our data analysts the most successful and have really launched them into more opportunities. One of the nice things about working for a company the size of GEICO in an industry like auto insurance is there are lots of areas that we can apply analytics and you know, as you become successful in some of these other skills that I talked about, you can move from different roles and start applying those skills to different opportunities and be successful wherever you are. So we've got lots of opportunities within GEICO to apply these data analytics skills, whether that's the pricing and reserving, which I am most familiar with and which my career has been focused on. But we also have product management areas where we're really looking at the product itself and trying to improve the package offerings that we have, the features of our product to make it the most appealing to our customers and most successful. The underwriting research area is a key area within an insurance company that really looks at the risks of customers that are coming to us and evaluating up front what's the, should we insure this risk, can we insure this risk, and if so, how are we going to insure it, and what product are we going to offer to those customers. There's a big fraud aspect to insurance, and we have groups within GEICO who are really trying to dig into fraud and understand how fraud happens, who's likely to commit fraud when it does happen. There's both underwriting fraud where people are not providing the most accurate information for us to evaluate their exposure. There's claims fraud where customers come and they try to get a claim for an accident that maybe didn't happen the way they say, or they're kind of trying to take advantage of the system. So we have groups that are really involved in digging into the data there and trying to evaluate that. The customer experience is important. One of the things that's made us so successful as a company is trying to provide the best customer experience to our policyholders. And so we have groups within our company that are really focused on trying to evaluate that customer experience and making the experience as user-friendly and as good for the customer as possible, so that they are happy with the company and their service levels are acceptable. We have a data scientist area that's really focused in on different ways to mine our data and improve the processes that we're looking at. Marketing is taking a lot deeper dive into retention of current customers and what's really driving those opportunities. And then we also have areas that are focused on internal processes, the way that we do things, and trying to make those processes better using some Six Sigma strategies and analytics to figure out, okay, how can we do things more efficiently? And that's really going to help us be more successful in the future. I wanted to take just a few minutes to profile a few of the associates that we have here at GEICO and kind of their background and how they're applying some of their analytics here at GEICO. So first we've got Greg here, Greg D'Amico, who went to undergrad at the University of Miami, majored in math, but also majored in studio art and had a focus, a minor in physics and biology. Then he graduated from UVA with a master's in biochemistry and molecular genetics, which is certainly not directly applicable to GEICO. And he decided to go and be a high school physics teacher for a while and decided that that wasn't what he really wanted to do. He really wanted to apply his math, apply his skills to a role. So now he is in our pricing, product, and reserving area doing work on Florida. And one of the key things that he's worked on is trying to implement a new hurricane catastrophe model for Florida to try and make sure that we're really evaluating the risk exposure if we have a major hurricane hit there again, what that's going to do to the company. Rich Tyson graduated from UVA with a degree in mathematics and with a financial concentration, but he also minored in religious studies. And again, we like to see people that have broader backgrounds when they're coming into these analytic roles because we think it helps them be more successful and more well-rounded as an analyst. He's currently working on a California class plan, which I talked about earlier is a very challenging project to really evaluate how all of the rating plan works together and really digging into the data there. Jennifer Vincent has an interesting career path. She graduated from UVA with a bachelor's in math and a master's in teaching at the same time. And she started here at GEICO as in various actuarial positions and decided that she needed a change, so she left GEICO and went out to do some medical malpractice consulting as an actuary and realized that that really wasn't as fulfilling to her as the GEICO opportunities were. So she came back to GEICO as a director of product management, director of pricing and product management now, since our departments have slightly changed. And one of the cool things that she's working on right now is she's really trying to look at these new safety features that are coming on the vehicles and trying to evaluate how these new collision avoidance features are going to affect our results, affect the likelihood of accidents, and how we should factor that into our pricing for someone who has a vehicle with these new product features. Pavel Kolomietz went to undergrad at Texas A&M and then grad school at UVA, with got a master's in economics specializing in industrial organization. And he's now on our data science team, decision science and transformation, and he's really trying to work on models to figure out what package of coverages is an individual customer likely to want when they come to GEICO, and can we offer that package to them up front and make that purchase experience the easiest for those customers as possible. So he's really digging into the data to try and understand how that works and come up with some recommendations for ways to do that. Ali Gordon was a graduate of UVA with a bachelor's in economics, and then she got a master's in management from Wake Forest. She started as a product management analyst, but has now moved on to a marketing area and is looking at the retention marketing that I mentioned earlier and trying to figure out, can we offer some incentives to the customer to encourage them to stay with GEICO, and what's going to be the most successful in that regard. And finally, last, I put her last because she does not have any UVA connections, but I thought her background was very interesting because she does not have a typical background of someone who gets into the auto insurance industry. She, Kristen Hill, who went to Duke, was a mechanical engineer, and she actually started her career working for Harley Davidson and decided that that really wasn't what she wanted to do, and she ended up coming to GEICO to work in our CALG area, which is our competitive advantage leadership group, and their job is really focusing on our processes and trying to figure out ways to do things better within GEICO. She's got her master black belt, which is a Six Sigma designation, and she's really taking those analytics and that data analysis skills to our different areas and trying to train them to do their jobs better and reduce errors and improve efficiency, which is, we think, a key to GEICO being successful in the future. So I thought she had a pretty interesting background and one that's not typical, but it definitely shows that there are ways to transition into a role here at GEICO, no matter what your background is. So finally, I'd like to summarize by just saying that data analysts absolutely add key value to each organization. If you look at companies, lots of companies are actively recruiting more and more data analysts, and it's the wave of the future, it really is. But the value from those data analysts comes from the ability to influence behavior and decisions. And key to that is really enhancing and developing the other skills that you have to make you more well-rounded, to make you able to communicate better with management and convince people that, you know, your analysis is the right way to go. And this is really only going to open up more opportunities for you in the future and make your career as successful as it can be. And speaking of careers, I would just like to finally end by saying GEICO is absolutely a great place to work. I've loved it. I've been here for 21 years and have no regrets in terms of getting into the auto insurance industry because of the dynamic nature of it and how interesting and exciting it is. And GEICO has been very successful, and we're looking to hire and recruit more and more strong analysts to help us figure out how to maintain that success and ultimately become the best number one company in the industry. And so if you are interested, you can certainly contact me if you have questions, or you can go to our website at careers.geico.com and look for all of those different opportunities I mentioned earlier and see if that's interesting to you. So with that, Liz, I would like to finish my part of it and see if we have any questions or comments.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much. This has been a great presentation. We do have some questions coming in, and I'd like to take a moment to thank the audience for joining us today. We will be reconvening for our next webinar on April 1st. Danny Rubin will be presenting how to write emails and job applications like a total pro. So we hope you'll come back and join us then. So I am going to start out with the first question. I think what I'm going to do is combine two together because they're kind of connecting. One person asked about the eventual arrival of the driverless car and how that might change pricing of auto insurance. And then another question came in about driving patterns as another category, and mobile GPS data. So, you know, how some of these emerging trends might influence auto insurance.
Yeah, those are great questions, and those are really hot topics going on right now in the industry. I'll start with the driverless cars. There's a lot of discussion going on. Different manufacturers are absolutely looking to develop some of these driverless cars that will essentially eliminate a lot of the driver characteristics that I had talked about earlier in my presentation, and really will shift a lot of that to the vehicle itself. One of the things that we study quite a bit is how many of these safety features, how long it takes for these safety features to work their way into the vehicle makeup of the industry. And it really does take quite a while for the majority of the vehicles in a fleet to have these new technologies. So this is going to be an important development for new vehicles as they come out, but there are still going to continue to be a whole lot of vehicles that aren't going to have these self-driving capabilities. And so it's going to be a while before they really become, in my opinion, a significant portion of the fleet out there. Having said that, absolutely the development of those capabilities is going to be important to evaluate, and it really is going to shift the risk exposure from the driver to the vehicle. And you know, when we look at other safety features, other technology that have developed in these cars, different manufacturers are more successful at it than others. And so it's going to be probably shifting to more evaluating how good are the different manufacturers at developing these technologies, which ones work the best and which ones don't. But the other thing is quite a bit, as you get new technology coming in, there's a learning curve that people have to using these things. And so sometimes features that you think are going to be really significant going forward don't demonstrate that in the early results because people aren't as familiar with how to use it appropriately. And so it takes some time. You know, a long ago example of that is anti-lock brakes. It took a while for people to really figure out how anti-lock brakes work. And in our job, we really like to have actual experience to evaluate to see not just what people are predicting it will do, but is it actually coming through in the data we're seeing? And that actually takes a while to get credible data to look at because you certainly need a volume of information, a volume of policies, a volume of vehicles to study before being confident in those results. As far as the GPS and kind of the location, absolutely, you know, that is another trend within the insurance industry. A lot of companies are getting into that space, and you know, every company, including us, actively look at that. And if you can get good information about where people drive, how they drive, the time of day, you know, balancing that all out with what people, you know, the big brother aspect of that, as well as the regulatory aspect of what's going to be allowed, it can certainly add insight into what the driving or the riskiness of the customer is. Having said that, you know, we still think that we have a really good model right now based on the information we get to really appropriately evaluate risk. And so we'll continue to monitor that and see how it goes and figure out what the impact of that
Thank
is.
Thank you. So another question came in asking if you could distinguish between data analyst and data scientist.
You know, that's a good question. I think sometimes they're used interchangeably. I think data scientists are really, in my opinion, trying to isolate the general data analyst into more of a modeling, rigorous statistical. So it's more like a different level of depth of knowledge for a data scientist versus a data analyst. We look at data all the time. And sometimes we use very simple models to look at data, and other times we use more complicated models to look at that. And I think there's kind of a blurry or a gray line in between what's just a data analyst but what's a data scientist. But kind of in my experience, the data scientist is just more focused on the rigorous statistical modeling techniques, more robust and advanced analytics than just kind of a normal data analyst who may be looking at very simple models.
Okay, great. Thank you. Another person has asked if you could give some examples of ways to probe for the reason behind questions. So if the ways to tell the manager or the audience, you know, sorry, but that's incorrect.
Yeah, that's a tricky discussion to navigate, and I don't have any secret sauce or secret advice in there, but I think you have to be sensitive to the questions that are being asked, and sometimes the larger meeting that you're in is not the place to really do that, and you need to kind of maybe have a one-on-one discussion or a more individual discussion with someone to get at that. The way I've seen it happen here is just kind of what I talked about, is in the meeting you acknowledge it and you say, you know, we didn't, you know, necessarily consider that, but we'll take that as a takeaway. And then you follow up almost immediately from that meeting with kind of a more individual or discussion with them to say, you know, here's what I think why you were asking that. Am I on the right track with that? And really try to kind of provide your view of the question and see if they can confirm that or say, no, it's something else. You can sometimes do that in a larger group setting. And say, you know, from what you're asking, I think, you know, maybe you're concerned about this, and see if you can kind of flesh that out in the meeting. But a lot of times that's more successfully done outside of that individual meeting, and just kind of say, we'll take that as a follow-up and we'll follow up with you more to get more information on
okay,
that.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the next question, what is the minimum threshold for data analysts in terms of analytical skill sets? Statistics, operation research, economics, or econometrics, relevant programming languages such as R or Python, et cetera?
Yeah, I'm hesitant to say that it's a specific statistics or operations research or economics. It really depends on the specific role you're interviewing for or trying to get into, but you have to have a strong base, an ability to really work with numbers and make decisions from those numbers. So whether that's in a statistical framework or an economic framework, we are really looking for people that have some sort of analytic background, familiarity with working with numbers, familiarity with kind of building some simple models. I think programming is absolutely critical. I mean, part of the challenge with being a successful data analyst is getting access to the right data, manipulating the data in the way that you need to get it, and then kind of evaluating the accuracy or the quality of the data that you have. So I wouldn't necessarily steer you to one statistics, economics, or anything like that, but just find one that fits for you. But then also be able to demonstrate that you have been able to use those that skill to make actual decisions or recommendations from them. And then supplementing that with different programming skills would be absolutely huge. When we're looking for people, a lot of times we're looking for people with SAS backgrounds. But that's because that's a tool that we use pretty regularly. SQL is very important, SQL. Also, we're looking for people who are familiar with R. But again, as long as you demonstrate that you have the capacity to handle some of those or one of those, and you have the ability to learn, that's what we're looking for in our roles.
Thank you. We've had some great questions today. So a couple more. Data visualization poses challenges. What recommendations do you have for those who cannot strongly visualize data?
That's a good question. You know, there are tools that you can look for, you know, pre-designed programs that will help you do that. So I think searching and seeking out what opportunities there may be for different software packages or tools that you can use to load your data into that are pre-packaged. For example, I know we use some modeling software that's kind of pre-designed for insurance issues, and it's already been developed with set graphs and charts and ways that you can visualize the data. That's probably the best way to kind of get into it if there's an opportunity for that in your position. Other than that, I think it's really talking to people who you think are successful at it and trying to understand how do they go about taking large data sets and summarizing it into manageable, understandable views that will really reveal the issues that you might be looking for. That's the best thing I can say.
Thank you. So the next question, what is the value of getting a master's in business analytics?
I think it certainly demonstrates that you have the ability to be successful in that role. I don't think it's a requirement for you to get a master's in that. And in fact, here at GEICO, we do a lot of training on the job that will help you get similar skills and kind of develop those skills as necessary. But anytime you can demonstrate that you have the capacity to learn these analytics and be successful at it, it only enhances your portfolio and your appeal to different companies.
Great, thank you. Well, that was actually our last question. We have had a number of audience members write in to say thank you. So, Steve, thank you so much. This has been a great presentation. We really appreciate the audience being with us today, and we will be following up later this afternoon with a copy of the recording and also a survey that we hope you will complete, and we hope you'll join us again on April 1st. So I did that twice. So Steve, thank you so much again. And if you can stay on with us for just a moment, I believe that we are finished for today, and we look forward to seeing everybody next time. Thank you so much.
Wahoo, go Hoos.